All right, Masterminders, Todd Durkin here. It is 11:05, Saturday morning, August 29th, and I am feeling good. Just got done with boot camp in the heat, boy, and it was hot today. Man, I was feeling good. And we had fellow Masterminder Larry Indiviglia in the house. It was great down there at the Bay. Today is our call, and we have a very, very special guest. We have a gentleman named Dr. Jack Singer on the line, and Dr. Jack is an amazing human being that has just an awesome background. Dr. Jack, are you there?
I certainly am, and I'm blushing already.
Man. Well, yeah, a couple things before we get rolling. I want to just introduce you to Dr. Jack because he was introduced to me actually by my virtual assistant, Denise Griffiths, who he shares as a virtual assistant. And she kept bragging about how much he really needed to work with Dr. Jack, and you need to get a hold of this guy. He works a lot of athletes and a lot of clients. Just take a listen real quick. Dr. Jack Singer is a licensed clinical sports and industrial organizational psychologist, author, trainer, speaker, and consultant. His expertise includes a doctorate in industrial organizational psychology and a postdoc in clinical sports psych. Jack has been recognized with diplomats from the American Academy of Behavioral Medicine, the Society of Police and Criminal Psychology, and he has been awarded with a special diplomat in sports psychology from the National Institute of Sports Professionals. He has a special certification in clinical hypnosis from the American Academy of Clinical Hypnosis, and Dr. Jack has taught in the psychology departments of seven different universities, including 4 years as an assistant professor of psychology at the U.S. Air Force Academy. Jack, you have an amazing background, and I am really, really honored that you have chosen to share your time with us today with our special mastermind group. Thank you for joining us.
Well, you know, Todd, it's a really treat, a really big treat for me, and you know, what you didn't tell everybody is that Denise was really telling me how wonderful you are and the wonderful accomplishments you have and how motivated you are. And when I hear people like that, and certainly your mastermind group is the same kind of people who are looking to improve themselves and being able to provide the best services they can for their clients, that's a turn on to me. So it's always a treat to be able to work with motivated people who are interested in learning and bettering their lives.
I appreciate it. You know, the Mastermind group, as I was telling you a little bit earlier on, is, you know, we've got the top, you know, 50 trainers or so in the Mastermind, and these people are hungry. They want more information. And this call is going to be unique because we've never had a sports psychologist on, and you kind of, you know, you go beyond sports psychology because you really transcend so many different fields. And folks, as you're listening in via your phone or via the webcast, I mean, just take a look at Dr. Jack's several different websites. You can go to AskDrJack.com. You can go to your new site that Denise just did, and that is what, DrJackSinger.com,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So just take a look at DrJackSinger.com, and that really you know, it shares just some of the awesome stuff that Jack's doing. Dr. Jack, can you tell us a little bit more about your business and what you do on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Todd. I really wear three hats. One hat I wear is I'm a clinical psychologist, which means when I examine an athlete or anybody for that matter, I'm interested in the whole person and what makes them tick and what their issues are and what's holding them back. I really want to know how to unleash the true power that's within all of us and what are the obstacles that are keeping people from doing that. So I examine the whole person. So even if it's an athlete coming to me for a specific reason, for example, this morning before I got on this call, a mother called me whose daughter is an elite gymnast, and she said she's run into a problem doing her back handspring. She became frightened, and she's afraid to do it, or she's balking. And she said, can I help her? And I said, absolutely, but first I want to talk to Mom and Dad. She said, why? I said, because I want to know everything about this person, not just the athlete. Mm-hmm. That will give me clues as to what could be getting in her mind that's causing an issue here. And so that's an example of how I study the whole person. So I'm a clinical psychologist, a sports psychologist, so that I'm highly interested in helping athletes, not just professional athletes or elite athletes, but the weekend warrior, anybody who wants to better themselves athletically or in terms of physical fitness to get the most out of themselves and overcome whatever the obstacles would be that would be preventing them from doing that. And then the third hat that I wear, Todd, and for everyone else listening, is I'm a professional speaker. So I love getting up in front of trainers, coaches, associations, organizations, medical groups, whatever it is, and doing one of my motivational programs, which really helps people understand, you know, where they're getting into trouble and how they can change it. The most popular program I have is something called Prescriptions to Prevent Hardening of the Attitudes, and it's really all about why your attitudes get negative and how to stop that from happening. So I wear all three hats.
Hmm. Well, I was on your site the other night, and I was watching you speak to a group, and I think one thing about your speaking, too, is you use great humor in your talking, and I think that's a powerful way to reach so many people because it seemed like you connected with your audience so well, and I really enjoyed watching that talk, so that was awesome. Awesome,
yeah, thanks.
Awesome.
Yeah, humor is something that, you know, kind of sets me apart of my speaking. There are a lot of psychologists who are on the speaking tour and a lot of very dynamic speakers, but I thread humor throughout everything I do because one thing we know from the research is that when people are laughing, then they're focused on what you're talking about, and it not only rivets their attention, but rivets their retention. Mm-hmm. So I'm always interested in having people laugh while they learn, and that's kind of
right.
My motto.
I would think, too, with laughter, I mean, right now, with the tension and the pressure that, you know, our athletes, our clients, ourselves, we put so much pressure on ourselves. Sometimes laughter is just such wonderful medicine for our own soul, and it seems like it lightens it up and allows us to play a little more freely as well.
Well, not only that, Todd, but there's a ton of research now that shows that when you laugh freely during the day at least 20 times, kids, by the way, the average child laughs 200 times a day. The average adult laughs 5 or 6. So if you can let yourself laugh more, it releases endorphins, and all of you know what those are, and it's the fastest way to release endorphins, faster than exercise releases them, faster than eating chocolate releases them. And those endorphins that are released actually give a jolt, a bolt to your immune system. So there's a lot of physiological reasons why laughing is important as well as mental reasons.
I'm already getting off track, but I need to ask. So let's say, how do you do that? How do you laugh 20 times? I mean, unless you force yourself to laugh.
Well, here you go. See, I knew this would lead to other things. That's why I said, you're never going to do this in one visit, Todd. Because I have so much information to help you with, your people with, that you'll want me back. But here's the
I love it.
Okay. Have a humor kit available. And what do I mean by a humor kit? Have some joke books in there. Have some funny videos or DVDs of movies that are funny. Stop watching TV with all the bad news that's on it and just lighten up and look at fun things and let things go. What happens with so many people, Todd, is they spend the bulk of their time during the day worrying. Mm-hmm. And they worry by saying things to themselves like, what if? Anything that you say to yourself that starts with what if is always followed by something negative. And that sets off the emergency system in the body that makes you tense and tight. So it's very difficult to accomplish anything, whether you're an accountant, a physician, or a trainer. If you're tense and tight because you're worrying about things, you are not going to ever get the most out of yourself. So you have to lighten up and let go and stop worrying. And the best way to do that is to have a humor break and do things that are humorous. For example, if I talk to physicians, I tell them to make sure in their office they have a refrigerator somewhere with a freezer, and they put popsicles in there. And they say, well, why? Or fudgicles. And I say, why would you have us do that? Because I want you to give the person in your office at the end of the day who's put up with the most heat a popsicle to eat in front of everybody.
Love
so
it.
She can kind of laugh, or he can laugh about it. We can all say, okay, you put up with the most heat, now you can chill down. I have people in medical offices or lawyers' offices throwing 50 cents in a kitty every time they say something that's incorrect or irritable to someone on the phone. And at the end of the month, we gather up all the money that's in the kitty, and we have a positive party funded by negative people, okay?
Like
so every
like
time
that.
Someone's negative, they learn not to be because they have to fund that kitty. So these are just a couple of many examples of fun things that I have people do. When I give my speeches, I put clown noses on people when they ask questions and just find other ways to make them laugh. I give them yo-yos that some people have never held on to since they were kids, paddle balls. I mean, this is what I do. We have to bring the child in us out instead of being so serious all the time.
I like that. Even as trainers, I mean, that's something we can include in our training, yo-yos and paddle balls and things
absolutely.
That make people laugh.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you where you can get all this stuff, too.
I love it.
So everybody get your pencils out and write this down. Oriental trading, If you go to Oriental Trading on the web, you can buy things by the dozen. They're very inexpensive. You can get clown noses, paddle balls, anything you can think of that kids like, and I give them away to adults. I'm going to give a speech later today to an elite soccer team, to the coaches, the parents, and the kids. And I bring these bracelets with me that have words on them like courage and motivation,
sure,
and stay happy. And I give those things away when everyone asks questions. So they wear the bracelets and they remember. So it just lightens things up and makes things fun.
I like that. So, Jack, you know, these people on the call, us trainers, we're talking, most of us are type A driven, goal oriented. We have things we want to get done. We want to get them done now. Our clients are the same way. They may want to lose weight. They may want to drop fat. They may want to get faster. One thing I always notice is that people often get stuck in their own way, and whether it be our perfectionist attitudes or we're not sure of how to get to where we want to go. I want to talk for a moment about goals, and as a clinical psychologist and sports psychologist, what is the roadblock that you often see, the number one roadblock that you often see when it comes to accomplishing goals or not accomplishing goals? What is it?
It's your internal critic. Now, that's a term that I invented. I wrote a book once called Conquering Your Internal Critic so You Can Sing Your Own Song, and what it really means is it's that little voice inside your head that doubts things and has you worried about things. We all have that voice. Anybody on the call who has more than one voice needs to call me immediately after the call. So we all have that little voice inside our head that says, don't try this, you're going to fail, you're not good enough, just stick with what you know. I mean, that little voice is responsible for keeping people from getting where they need to go. And that little voice, that internal critic, was developed when we were little kids. What happens is when you're born with what one of my mentors in clinical hypnosis calls a subconscious mind that's like a garden full of flowers. And those flowers, unfortunately, have weeds planted among them by our parents and other people who think they're doing us a favor, but they discourage us from doing things like, you know, you're not really good enough to make the football team, so don't embarrass yourself by trying out. Or, you know, you're the wrong sex, the wrong race, the wrong religion. You're not handsome enough. You're not pretty enough. On and on and on. And
mm-hmm.
A professor once did a research study on this and found out that the average youngster in this country between the ages of 6 and 18 is told, no, don't try it, you know, stay safe, don't take risks, all of this kind of garbage, is told that 148,000 times during that 12-year span versus 4,000, go for it, you can do it. Anything you want to do is possible. So with a ratio of 148,000 negatives to 4,000 positives, it's no wonder that most of us have this self-doubt, this lack of self-esteem, lack of self-confidence. And so we've planted weeds among these flowers, and then we pick up where our parents left off. We fertilize those weeds by continually doubting ourselves, not being sure, getting impatient. If it's not done now, I'm a failure. This is what one of the problems is that you have with perfectionistic folks, like some of you may be, and that is you tend to be all or nothing thinkers. If it's not perfect, I'm a failure, and that's completely irrational, but that's the way a lot of people feel. So they don't realize the world is gray. It's not black or white, and you don't have to be perfect because that's a struggle and frustration. Nothing is perfect. So if you have to give yourself a break, you have to stop that negative internal conquering your internal critic. And I, you know, of course we don't have time today, but I have all kinds of methods, and I've written about them and have audios about them on how to stop that internal critic dead in its tracks.
Okay. And that was going to be one of my questions is, how do you overcome, you know, this roadblock, internal critic? We all have that little birdie on the shoulder that says, no, you can't do it. I don't know. Think about it. What if? You know,
right.
You said you got to break that.
I'm going to give everybody, this is going to be good. I'm going to give you all one of the simplest exercises I give my clients, and yet it's one of the most powerful. And here's what you do. You put a rubber band on your wrist, the kind of rubber band, the fat kind that come in the mail, not too tight, just sits on your wrist. And every time you catch yourself with a negative thought, like, oh, I don't know if I can do it now, or I'll do this tomorrow. People procrastinate, especially weight loss programs and exercise programs, or I don't think I'll ever get there, or what if this, or what if that. Anytime you catch yourself doing that, you snap the rubber band. That will immediately stop the thought. That's step one. Step two, you take a nice couple of deep breaths in through your nose and out through your mouth. Just feel the coolness coming in through your nose and the warmth as it goes out through your mouth. And that, once you've done step two, then you're relaxing yourself, and then you go to step three, which is replace that negative thought with a more rational thought, like, how do I know I can't do this unless I try? Or what's the worst thing that can happen if I don't do it? So what? Just try it. Go for it. I'm going to be really pleased once I do it. So this is a shortened, abridged version of a thought-stopping technique that really is powerful.
No, absolutely. One of the things in speaking with you over the last few weeks on all that you do, and I think one of the things that sets you apart, again, beside your 33 years experience, is this whole hypnosis thing. I've actually had several athletes use hypnosis, especially baseball guys, because they're so in the head so many times. I mean, all athletes are, but my baseball guys have found tremendous success with hypnosis. Is this something that if we want to learn more, I mean, our clients, ourselves, on how to use hypnosis to even overcome any of these obstacles, do we just go to your website and learn more about that?
Yeah, you can go to drjack.com, and there's a products page, and there's a free listening thing, audio of some of a hypnotic relaxation technique that I do. I do have some products that are there. When I work with athletes, I prefer to make my own hypnotic tapes because then it's specific for them and what their issues are. But I have a product there called Core Sports Performance, which is a dual hypnotic CD series that involves breathing and visualization, trained optimism, which maybe we'll be able to talk a little bit about today, and maintaining emotional balance and self-hypnosis. I have another one called Loving the Inner You, which is not just for athletes, it's for anybody. And it's learning the real source of all of your problems and how to turbocharge your self-esteem and capture your strengths and resources. And again, self-hypnosis to master your destiny. So those are things that I do with athletes, but with athletes in particular, even if it's a long-distance athlete that I'm working with on the phone, because I work with athletes all over the country and Canada, many of whom I never get to meet, we do phone consultations. Once I understand what that athlete's issues are, then I will make a CD, hypnotic CD, specifically for that athlete's issues and send that off to them for them to use and practice. The power of hypnosis, Todd, is unbelievable. And believe it or not, when I was in training to be a psychologist, I thought it was the hokiest thing. I took one course, said, I'll never use this. This is really dumb, and never believed in it until I got involved in it by accident with a patient who insisted that I hypnotize her because she broke her tailbone and there was no cure other than rest and she couldn't take the pain, and said, can you just please try this? And I said, I don't believe in hypnosis. And she said, I don't really care if you believe in it or not. Can you do it? And I said, well, I took one course. I'll do what I can. So I sort of shot from the hip. And when I was done with the session, her pain disappeared. And she was amazed, and I was more amazed. And then I joined the American Society for Clinical Hypnosis. It's been nothing but a love fest since then. And I belong to the Sports Psychology Division, where we work on specific hypnotic programs for athletes.
How long have you been doing that, hypnosis?
I've been doing that now for 25 years. She came to me after I'd been in practice for about 8 years.
You keep saying athletes. Do you work with a lot of clients that, let's say, aren't dealing with sport, but maybe with weight loss or image issues?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I don't just work with athletes. It's a group that I like to work with. And I have a whole, you know, program specifically for athletes, but I work with anybody. I do relationship counseling and all kinds of things. And I use hypnosis in all different ways. I help couples rejuvenate their marriages with hypnosis, for example. But weight loss, I think it was Larry who asked a question early on about weight loss. Hypnosis is not the cure-all for weight loss. A lot of people think that that's a shortcut, and so they want to get hypnotized so they won't eat. Well, you know, I correct them right in the beginning. The hypnosis that I do for weight loss will keep you motivated, but it's not going to make you lose weight. The way you lose weight is to stay on a program. And the program for weight loss, as all of you know, has to be a combination of burning calories, which is exercise, of course, and fewer calories taken in. And once you do both of those things, that's when the weight starts peeling off. And the problem with weight loss, which gets to, I think, Larry's question, is we all have a little thermostat inside of us that's genetically built into us where your body is used to a certain weight and doesn't want to lose it because then it thinks it's starving. So the worst thing you can do in a weight program is actually stop eating meals because your metabolism then slows down because it thinks you're starving. And then when you start eating regularly again, your metabolism is slow, and therefore the weight comes on a lot faster. So people need to be on a gradual weight loss program of something like 2.5, maybe 3 pounds a week. There's no shortcuts to this, but they can do it consistently, and they shouldn't be weighing themselves every half hour to see if they lost weight. That's not the way to do this. But if they develop a life plan that they can stick with for life, then that's better than any diet that's ever been written.
Yeah,
and the hypnosis comes in because it helps motivate people to stay on the program.
You're speaking our language, my man. We're talking to Dr. Jack Singer, drjacksinger.com, and he's killing it right now. I absolutely love this stuff. Talk to me about motivation. I mean, one thing as trainers, as coaches, we are always doing is we're motivating. We're motivating our athletes. We're motivating our clients. We're motivating our teams, our staffs. And sometimes even the energy may wane. I'd like to know if you have any specific mental tips on how do we consistently motivate people to be consistent with their fitness program. I mean, motivation is a fascinating topic. It's a topic in itself.
This
so
is really, this is, you know, I can speak personally for this because I, you know, I find a million excuses not to go to the gym. And so I myself weekly have to be re-motivating myself. I have so much work to do that I can easily put it off. But I have decided that when I leave that gym, I feel like $1 million. And therefore, I want to have that feeling. So I make a chart where I keep a list of every time I go to the gym and how much time I spend there. And that helps me to motivate going there because I don't want to look at that chart without a check mark on it. And I also will visualize in my mind how good I'm going to feel when I leave the gym. Now, when I go to the gym, I do cardio and then I do some weight stuff for my upper body. And then I do cardio again and come home, and I feel great. And I know that I've accomplished something. And so I visualize how I'm going to feel when I leave the gym, which takes the place of how I'm feeling now when I'm procrastinating going. Now, for your listeners, there's a wonderful workbook here that will help all of you with your businesses. So get your pencils out. It's called Move Your Body, Tone Your Mind. And it's written by Kate Hayes. Put out by Harbinger Press, so you Harbinger Publications, so you can go on Amazon or any of these places and get it. And this is the workout therapy workbook, but it's really based on the psychology of motivating yourself to keep working out and things like that. Getting up when here's one of the chapters: getting up when you're feeling down, overcoming inertia and changing your mood, feeling strong and capable, self-esteem and competence. So this workbook really, in fairly simplistic terms, has it all to address the question that you're looking at.
So it sounds like focus on how you feel after the workout and visualize yourself how you feel after the workout is one tip. Now, how about trainers? You know, even you know, people think, oh, you're a trainer. It's easy to work out. Well, we're like you as well. We're busy. We get inundated with trying to maintain legendary customer service, growing our business, taking care of our clients. How do we stay motivated? I mean, we've got, you know, the best of the best in the call. We're trying to make big changes in the world. How would you suggest from a mental, I mean, obviously that we got to work out. How do we stay motivated?
Well,
any special tips?
Yes. First of all, you're role models. So you have to work out if for no other reason, you've got to walk the talk.
Love it.
I can't tell you how many times I've had doctors, for example, weight loss doctors who are way overweight or doctors who are going to tell you how to stop smoking and they smoke. I mean, it's absurd. You have to be a role model for the people that you're working with. So if that doesn't motivate you, then you're in the wrong business, I think. You've got to look great, and you've got to be able to do the exercises you're telling your clients to do, and you've got to be able to believe in what you're telling them for yourself as well. So that should be number one motivation. But are there days where you're going to get up and not feel like it? Yeah. But that all stems from your internal critic. Once you get a handle on this internal critic, and I say I've written things about this, I have articles and books on it and so forth, but once you get a handle on your internal critic, then you can stop that thinking before it continues to overtake you for the day. So let me just make up a couple of examples. Let's say you get up in the morning, you've had an argument with your spouse the night before. There's a lot of unfinished business there. It kind of got swept under the rug, never got resolved. You're still irritated because you think you've been treated unfairly. It's very hard to get motivated to go to work, although some people are just the opposite. When they're upset like that, they want to go and pump iron and do things like that because that's a stress reducer. But for some people, they just can't get motivated because their body now is reacting to where their mind is going, which is a negative place. Once you realize that that's what's happening and you can visualize how much better you're going to feel later, then you have the first step. Then you need to start snapping the rubber band and doing whatever else it takes to realize that negative thinking is not going to accomplish anything. If you have unfinished business with your spouse, plan when you can deal with that and realize you've had an argument before, you felt this way before, things will get better. You have to visualize things getting better. I'm always telling people, you may be facing a mountain, but look at the valley beyond the mountain instead of looking at the mountain.
Right.
And so doing those kinds of things will help you overcome the obstacles that are standing in front of you.
That's great. I think it's a key thing. I always talk to our trainers about, you know, staying motivated, reading great books, listening to teleseminars, being involved, like in this mastermind group, we have a lot of motivation that goes around. It's like brushing your teeth. We try to do it every day. It's really important, I think, to be at the top of your game and to really stay fresh and focused mentally is to be, you know, be energized and be motivated. And I think these are great points, Dr. Jack, that you're making about motivation.
Todd, you gave me a great idea just now that I'd like to share with your group.
What's that?
You mentioned brushing your teeth. I have people make a contract with themselves that they have to do the thing they're avoiding before they get to do the thing that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way life works. Like, but kids don't want to do that. They'd say, just let me watch this TV show first, then I'll do my homework. No. You do the homework first, we'll tape the show, then you get to watch the show as a reward for doing your homework. That's the way it should be. So if someone's avoiding the gym, or if you as a trainer are avoiding something you need to be doing, you can make a deal with yourself, and if you really stick to this, it really works. Brushing your teeth is an example. Most people like to brush their teeth in the morning before they start off for the day, or at least brush them at night before they go to bed. Well, if you make a deal that you don't get to brush your teeth until you've done what you need to do, and you stick to that deal, you will be much more motivated than you can believe if you stick to the deal. In other words, I don't get to brush my teeth until I go to the gym and have a workout. Well, I better not get close to anybody, but that kind of thing. And if you do that and you stick to it, it will motivate you to doing what you need to do first.
That's a great point. A lot of wisdom coming through here. I could tell that. You've been around. I like this. Talking about adversity, right now, many people out there, you know, trainers, our clients, we're facing adversity. You know, whether it be cash flow, employees, should we grow, should we not grow? Maybe we have family issues going on. Maybe it's our own personal health. Do you feel there's a way to kind of compartmentalize your life to stay focused on your goals, which we like to say go big or go home, focused on your goals, despite maybe having some junk going on in our own life? I mean, can we compartmentalize? How do you do that?
That was a beautifully put question, Todd. That is a really insightful question. We can compartmentalize things, and we need to compartmentalize things. For example, when I'm speaking to an audience of 1,000 people, everyone has issues in their life at that time that's going on. But I tell them to put them aside for the hour that I'm talking to them and just open your minds to the possibilities. Okay? And then you'll be surprised that after you listen to the possibilities, maybe a lot of those issues will go away. So put them aside. Now, when we talk about all this adversity and the things that are going on, it's all based on fear. this based fear, by the way, somebody once said fear, F-E-A-R, stands for false evidence appearing real.
Yep.
Because about 97% of the things we're afraid of are things that will never happen, but it's one of these what if it happens kind of
Absolutely.
Thing. So it's all based on fear, like what if I lose my business, what if I don't get any more clients, and we have to learn how to overcome the fear. So when I'm working with someone, I address the fears first, then I teach them methods of overcoming the fear and realizing that most fears are not rational. It gets into an issue of optimism versus pessimism. And this is another area where there's been a ton of research on people who are oriented optimistically versus those who are oriented pessimistically. There seems to be some genetic flow that causes this, but these things can be changed. And, you know, somebody named Seligman wrote the greatest book on learned optimism is the name of the book, and it's really all about how you can train yourself to be optimistic. Now, here's what I mean by optimism. Let's use athletes. When athletes lose a match or a game, if they then blame themselves for that loss, in other words, I'm not as good as I thought I was, I've been struggling lately, I don't know when this is going to get better. In other words, they take full responsibility for the loss as if it's a chronic problem. Those athletes continue to lose. But athletes who find a rational reason for it, like, yeah, I had an off night or an off day, or the weather conditions were unusual, or we were playing at a place where the fans are on top of us and they were yelling and screaming, but we only play there twice a year. Those athletes and those teams with athletes with that kind of positive, optimistic orientation, where they look at their loss as a temporary thing, those people go on to series of wins and victories. So the research on optimism is very clear that we need to constantly look at the bright side of things. We need to believe that we have the ability, even if we've, quotes, failed this time, we have the ability to continue. You know, Colonel Sanders from Kentucky Fried Chicken, he didn't have a successful recipe till he was 66. He had failure after failure, but never quit. R.C. Macy's from Macy's Department Store had 9 store failures during his career till he found the right formula to make it work. Babe Ruth, who had the home run record, also had, I forget how many thousands of strikeouts along the way, but he didn't focus on the strikeouts. He focused on the next home run. And that's really what people need to do. We all have failures and disappointments. I've made bad investments, been screwed out of all kinds of money, had clients and people screw me over because I trusted them. I've had, you know, everybody has this. I've had people die in my family. My sister died this year, younger than me. I mean, everybody has tragedies. But we need to move beyond that and put it aside and say, what am I going to do to get the best out of myself and the best out of my life? That's where I need to be focused.
That's awesome. I'm fired up. This is great.
You should be. I wish I was speaking in front of all of you guys. I can let it out. I'm trying to hold myself back on the phone here.
I love it. I can feel the passion. There's a saying I know. It says something like, an optimist finds the good in every challenge, and a pessimist finds the challenge in every good.
Yeah.
And I think those are all great points that really always yearning and striving to keep a strong mindset. And the mindset right now is so important that we protect that mindset and we can overcome that. Any other points, like let's say we're facing adversity, and maybe the adversity could be coming even from within our family when we're always surrounding by that energy, or maybe even our employees. How do you formulate good, strong, positive, vibrant energy on a consistent basis when one is surrounded by negative energy?
Okay, and one of my lectures I talk about removing yourself from negative people. And if you can't remove yourself from negative people because you live with them or you're stuck with them in some way, then disregard the messages they give you, because negative people want you to join the negativity club.
Amen, amen.
It makes them feel better, you see? It makes them feel better. They don't have to feel guilty. It's like smokers don't want to hang around with ex-smokers because then they can't justify why they're still smoking, or they try to get people to go back to smoking. Even though they don't have malice, that's what they tend to do psychologically. So negative people, which there's a lot of them, will constantly put you down, tell you it's not going to happen, you can't do that, that idea is stupid, whatever. Even my own dad when I was growing up said, you sure you want to do that? You know, the negative, building up the internal critic. You need to disregard all of that and say, I can do this. I've done it before. I can do it again. This is a risk that's worth taking. Nobody gets anywhere without taking risks. These are the kinds of comments and affirmations you need to give yourself. And again, I would refer to another book. This is a book that's got a wonderful title, and it's really valid, the title. And the title is Change Anything in 21 Days. And it's all about recharging your life with the power of affirmations by Ruth Fishel, F-I-S-H-E-L. And if you look at that and you write down positive affirmations every day, put them on little cards that you can stick on your computer screen, stick them on the rear view mirror side of your car so you can look at them while you're driving to work, put them on the mirror when you're brushing your teeth in the morning so you can remind yourself. If you do those things consistently for 21 days, you can make anything happen that you want to happen. You will convince your subconscious mind to do it. And if you combine that with like a hypnotic or a self-hypnotic program to help really focus in on that, like the kinds of programs I have, that's a commercial, of course. And that will really zone it in on you. And I think everybody is capable of accomplishing what they want.
Do you have like a generic program, like just for what we're talking about? Like let's say it's energy and positive and someone wants to meditate each morning or do some hypnosis. Which product would it be?
That's the Loving the Inner You hypnotic series. Loving the Inner You not only will help you relax and meditate, but it helps you get rid of the garbage from childhood and adolescent, those thoughts that were put in your mind, and move in a positive direction regardless of what's happening to you. And that one is really good.
And is that an audio tape?
They're audio. There's two CDs in there. Each one has two tracks on them. The tracks get deeper and deeper. You don't do it while you're driving a car, of course. You do it, and because they're very hypnotic, it's me, it's my voice on there. And I've been getting people from all over the country raving about the success of this. And it's really based on the things that I do in the office with clients.
Yeah. You know, I just thought of something. I think it's a good point. Is not only may it be applicable for some of us, but some of our clients obviously can utilize these methods and tips. So trainers, I mean, check out Dr. Jack's website, drjacksinger.com, and you can look at all his different products. Or if you have questions, certainly email him or call him because he's so gracious with his time. You can look at this because it might be something we want to offer our clients. And those may be the one or two or three clients that, like, man, they just drain you. And y'all know you have, you know, maybe those one or two clients that they need more attention than everybody else. They have some, energy and stuff going on in their life that needs a lot of, things. Maybe a product like this could be something that
is very helpful for them.
Yeah.
And something I wanted to mention when you mentioned goals a few times, Todd.
Yep.
When I have people go through goals, whether they're athletes or not, one of the key questions I ask them after they list their short-term goals for me and I tell them to visualize that goal actually happening, how will your life be different once that goal is attained? And I have them really focus on those things. Then I ask them a very key question. What can I do, meaning them, what can you do to sabotage yourself from attaining this goal? Write it down.
Mm.
And they sit around and then they write down what can they do to sabotage it. So, for example, if someone's goal is to lose 20 pounds, what can I do to sabotage myself from losing 20 pounds? And I will write down things like, not the obvious things like snack between meals, everybody knows that, but I will wait till my wife is out of the house to sneak food. I will get myself so hungry that when I go to the restaurant, I have to eat the bread before the food comes because I'm so hungry. And you actually start to realize the things that you've done all your life that's been sabotaging yourself and keeping you from attaining your goals. Hmm. So once you recognize it, it really helps you to prevent it.
Yeah. No, and I think the more we do that, we're making mental awareness come to fruition. And as we all know, when we're physically conditioned and mentally focused and spiritually aligned, that's when we can really potentiate our full potential. I think it's a really, really great point. Chad, one more thing, and you're kind of alluding to it now, but even as trainers in the fitness industry, I always say if you want more, you have to give more. And we give and we give and we give. But sometimes we can also, that can be a detriment if it takes away and robs us of our energy. Any other mental tips that we can do to make sure we protect ourselves? I mean, you made some great points about the affirmations and removing yourself from any energy that's negative. Anything else that we can use as tips to stay on fire?
Yes. I think everybody needs to be assertive, not aggressive, but assertive. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest problems I see with young entrepreneurs or people trying to start a business or whatever is they give away the farm because they want to be liked and they're afraid they'll turn people off. That is the wrong attitude. Somebody wrote a book once called The Disease to Please. If your job is just to please other people and you sacrifice yourself in the process, it's bad news. Okay? The other part of bad news on the other end of the spectrum is being aggressive. That's bad news. Aggressive meaning that, you know, you get irritated easily and you tell people off and stuff like that.
Sure.
I'm just talking about being assertive, which means standing up for yourself without offending anyone else. So if somebody says to me, what is your fee? And I tell them my fee. I don't back off of my fee. Now, I will, of course, if they say, you know, this is really a hard time for us and with the economy, then I, you know, I will do something there. But I don't let people take advantage of me because I'm afraid to say no to people. And I think that's a really big thing that a lot of folks have trouble with is saying no to people. And so they say yes, but then they beat themselves up for saying it. Mm. And one of the best little books on that, you can actually order it on Amazon. You can get a used copy for a penny and pay $3.99 for shipping and handling. It's called Don't Say Yes When You Want to Say No.
I love that. That's good.
The author's name is Fensterheim. One word, Fensterheim. And that book has been around for 25 years. It's a great book. I assign most of my clients who have assertiveness issues to read it. You don't let people take advantage of you, but you don't put them down in the process. So I'm not asking you to be aggressive. The best way to look at assertiveness versus aggressiveness is if you're in a restaurant and you order, say, a burger medium rare and it comes medium well, what would you do? The non-assertive person eats it anyway and is sort of teed off, you know, like I don't have time to wait for this to be done again, or makes up a bunch of excuses and eats it anyway. The aggressive person causes a scene. We don't want either of those. We want the assertive person to calmly call over the waiter or waitress and say, you know, I ordered this medium rare and they made a mistake and made it medium well. Would you please cook another one? That's assertiveness. You're not letting anyone take advantage of you. You're not screwing yourself over, and you're not being aggressive at the same time. That's the goal. Everyone needs to assert themselves and not be afraid to be so.
Mm, man, that is powerful, powerful, powerful words. Dr. Jack, I can't help but notice you keep mentioning all these books to read. I'm a huge believer in reading if you want to be at the best of your game. Just as a personal question, do you have a number in your head, like per month you try to read one book, two books? I mean, how often do you read? I could tell, obviously, you read a lot.
Because I'm preparing speeches all the time, and I just finished writing a book, so that took a tremendous amount of research, and so I was doing a lot of reading. Frankly, I'm a little odd this way because I don't read for pleasure, which I really should. I don't read anything that's fiction. That's just me because I have this weird thought that I could be reading a psychology book, so why should I waste my time reading fiction? But that's wrong. I need to relax and do more of that. But I don't sit around reading all the time. I read portions of things, and I assign readings to clients and things like that. I don't think there's a magic number for reading. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people like audio programs because it's a little easier than reading. For a lot of folks, they like to listen to audio programs, and I certainly think that's fine. But again, if you tell your clients, you know, I want you to read this and this and this, they may never do it, but they need to know that in little pieces they can do it. You know, when
sure.
I work with younger clients, I have a workbook called Turning Slumps into Streaks, and and I have them work on that little chapter by chapter, things like that, and they have to write things down. It's always important to write things down, your goals, your obstacles, anything you can think of, write it down. People are 11 times more likely to accomplish something if they wrote it down than if they just say it to themselves.
Hmm. I'm writing that down as you speak.
Yes, there you go.
So I'm writing it down.
There you go. So, no, there's no magic amount of reading that people should do, and I'm not trying to come off as some guy who reads everything. That's not true. But I think you can find key things that are important to read, and I have a lot of articles on my website that I think would be insightful that people could read. You know, many of them are stress-related articles, and others are related to athletic situations like optimism versus pessimism and the fear of failure and things like that. I think your audience will get a lot out of reading
Absolutely.
Those short articles.
Do you have a newsletter as well?
I haven't started that yet because I get so overwhelmed with all this technical stuff, you know, that I've got Denise is going to work on that with me. But
good.
I don't have a newsletter yet, but that's going to be coming.
I love it. Now, you mentioned you don't read for fun, and it's kind of you're kind of being beat up mentally. Dr. Jack, if you like, I can do some hypnosis with you and help you
here
with
you
that
go.
Issue you're having.
That would be perfect, Todd. Thank you very much.
Hey,
I really need that.
I got a couple more questions for you. I want to open it up for the crew
right.
here. Leadership. You've been around 33 years. You've had so many different experiences in so many different fields, speaking, presenting, writing, in all of your psychology work. Can you talk to me for a moment about leadership? We always, as trainers, as fitness entrepreneurs, we're talking about improving our leadership abilities. What are some of the great actions that leaders do? Can you give us a few leadership points?
Yeah, you're going to really laugh at the first one. Fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means you don't have to be perfect. You may not know all the answers, but just act like you do.
Yeah.
And if you act like you do, not only will people follow you, but you'll start to believe in yourself.
Mm.
Now, like, for example, the first time I ever gave a speech in front of an audience, I didn't know what it was going to be like.
Yep.
But I acted like I was okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got more comfortable with it. And they followed my lead. And I got more comfortable with more audiences. But
yep.
the first time I did it, I had no clue what was going to happen. Okay, and there was some fear that I had. In fact, like, what if I run out of things to say, or what if I don't say the right thing, or what if I can't answer a question? So I wasn't stopping that internal critic at that time, but I faked it, and then I was fine. And I think that's kind of what a lot of people do that we admire. There are actors who go in and take an audition who really don't believe that they're great actors, but they fake it, and they come across okay, and they get the job, and then they start believing in themselves. And
absolutely.
So I think that you don't have to be perfect and you don't have to know all the answers. You just have to inspire people by showing people that you can be, you don't have to be perfect, but you can continue to stay focused on a goal and continue to do it. And that's the best way you can lead people. Stay focused on a goal like I am and continue to do it. Maybe show them the method you use. I make a chart for myself so that every time I go to the gym, I check it off. Every time I run a mile, I check it off. Or how much time did I do? I mark it down. I have it on the computer. So I want to go out the next day and try to beat my record. This is the way that people stay motivated. And if you can demonstrate these techniques to your clients, you will be a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I like that. You mentioned the other day we were talking this week, and you mentioned something about rewards. Can you just talk to me a moment about reward, reward, reward?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things missing with leaders is they have the following philosophy. Their philosophy is if someone's doing their job, that's what they get paid for. I don't have to recognize that.
Yeah.
When someone's not doing their job, I'm going to be all over them. Well, this is exactly the wrong way to lead, because then it's like a child. Every time the child acts up, you're giving the child attention, and every time the child's doing something right, you're ignoring the child. Well, if you do that, the child's going to continue to act up, because even being yelled at is better than being ignored. So they would rather do something for negative attention than do something that gets no attention. So with employees, it's the same thing, and clients. You want to constantly be praising them for what they do that's right, always patting them on the back and telling them you appreciate it, not making stuff up, but genuinely, when you appreciate something, letting them know. That's critically important.
Awesome. Now, what about if they don't? I mean, I think we know the answer, but what if we don't? What if we have an employee that messes up and we praise them in public, condemn them in private? Any specific tips from your leadership training as far as conflict management?
Well, if they're continually to mess up even after you give them feedback and you're doing everything you can to praise when they do things right, then they have some issue going on that has nothing to do with you or the job. It has to do with an issue that's going on that you may not have any control over at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not want to talk to you about it. They may not even be aware of it. But it could be someone who's got anger issues that take place before they even leave their home.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't shut it off with a faucet when you get to work. So
sure.
they have an attitude, or they have a mood, or they treat people wrongly. So there's only two choices then. If they won't get some help with that or talk to somebody about it, you have to get rid of them.
Yep.
Because they can make the whole core of your employees rotten.
Amen.
You know, one bad apple. So you can't be a therapist to everybody who works for you. If it's not going to work, move on. Don't feel sorry for people. Move on. Because you can't screw yourself over by trying not to do the right thing for that bad employee.
Right. Ah, great, great, great points there. I want to end on this. Again, I keep bringing it up, but your wisdom is shining through. You've obviously learned a lot of lessons. You actually shared a few of them today. Can you, in maybe just two or three different points, share some of your life lessons that you can pass on to us as fitness entrepreneurs, as people that are really striving to get to the next level in our own personal and business lives? What are some general lessons that maybe we can apply for ourselves?
Well, I think that that's another wonderful, wonderful question. I would just use my own life as an example. I started off up until my junior year of high school being so shy and introverted that I wouldn't maintain eye contact with anyone when I was walking between classes. I'd look at the floor, never talk to anybody. And until I recognized that I had this internal critic and this voice constantly telling me that I wasn't attractive, especially females wouldn't really want to find anything interesting in me, I finally developed a sense of humor and started overcoming that lack of self-confidence with my sense of humor because I realized I could make people laugh. Find whatever special skill you have, and everyone has them. Find what those are and use that to motivate yourself and to make yourself move forward. You don't have to be perfect. I still have a lack of confidence in certain things that I'm not afraid to admit, but I don't focus on that. I focus on what I'm successful at. I focus on what I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I continue to strive. And that, I think, is the best life lesson is focus on what you're good at, build yourself around it, and let go of the crap that you're worried about.
Great. Oh, man. I got to write it down. Focus on what you are good at.
Right.
That is phenomenal. You know, I do want to ask this question because it comes up a lot, and I don't want to let it go. We work with a lot of kids here. And kids are such special human beings, and we always are trying to, you know, instill self-confidence, self-esteem, belief in themselves. What tips do you have as far as if you're working with a kid that maybe he's scared, maybe he's got a baseball game or a Pop Warner football game, and, you know, he's showing like, you know what, Mom, Dad, I don't want to play this. I'm a little scared. I don't know if it's the right thing. I mean, I don't know if this is more of a parenting question or more of a trainer question, but when dealing with young children, you know, Taekwondo, well, so one day they love it and one day they don't love it. Do you have any tips? I mean, again, I don't know if this is more of a I guess this is more of a sports psychology question. How do you deal with the young kids and making sure we're constantly building their esteem and confidence when maybe their confidence is wavering?
Well, I work with a lot of kids. The youngest, usually around 8 years old, athletes. I always start by talking to the parents because for, I would say, 75% of the kids I work with, the problem is the parents, not the kids.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are reacting to the parents because they have an overbearing father or mother or both who tend to get their gratification by the successes of their children, which means when the kids aren't successful, the parents get irritated. And they put more pressure or they subtly make the kid feel guilty because they didn't perform well.
Right.
And so the big issue is dealing with the parents, which, of course, you're not able to do very much in your capacity. And you're dealing with what the end result of that, which is the child's behavior. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that children, as adults also, when they're frightened, they frequently do not realize they're frightened. And therefore, they do not express fear. They express anger.
Right, right.
A lot of people express anger when they're frightened. Okay?
Yep.
And so when you see a child who's angry, that the basis for that may be, I'm angry because you're making me do something that I'm really afraid I can't do and I don't want to fail.
Yeah.
So that's really what that's all about. And so once you understand that with the child and say, hey, we all have fears, we're all afraid. I understand you're afraid, but let's find out what you're afraid of or let's go through this in steps so that you won't have to be afraid anymore. Then that'll be very helpful. But I'm afraid that one of the things you have is parent issues where you're not in control of what's happening there.
Yeah,
so as
point.
I said, I always work with the parents as well as the youngsters because I want to make sure that they're not doing the wrong thing. One of the worst things parents can do, by the way, with kids who are in events like games and matches and things is as soon as the game is over, start criticizing the child. Did you see what you did there? And why didn't you take that shot? And how come you struck out here? Or what did you do? That's the worst thing a parent can do. When a child is done with an athletic event, they're emotionally drained. The last thing they want to do is go through it, even if they won. I mean, my son was a championship tennis player. He didn't even want me to discuss the match with him when he killed somebody. He just wanted to calm down and rest and not discuss it for a day or two, and that's the way it should be.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No,
so great
if you
point.
Have a child who comes home from one of your clinics or one of the things you run and the parents start grilling him on what went on, that is the wrong thing. You have to advise the parents, leave the child alone, and if he or she wants to discuss it, they will at their time. But they're emotionally drained. They've been through a big exercise here. It's not time to start going through it. You know, the parents want to make sure they're getting their money's worth and all of that, so they want to find out what the kid did and everything. That is the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, great point. Last question, Dr. Jack, before we open it up, because I know you've got another interview. You're doing, Fox Sports or something like that, but you, one of those big shows. We talked the other day about something, you know, as trainers, we need to learn how to sell our business and sell our services and everything else. When we're talking business, whether it be our clients or whether it be us, how do you win in the inner game of sales? I mean, we got to learn how to sell. Do you have any tips on what we talked about the other day?
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a whole speech on that called Winning the Inner Game of Sales, which is really using sports psychology techniques in selling, because it's all based really on the same thing. It's based on learning to build confidence, for example, in yourself, and learning what the obstacles are that are getting in the way. So if you have trouble selling and you avoid selling and you avoid cold calling and all of that stuff, it's all because of the internal critic. So the first thing to do is to write down what you're afraid of. And if you're really honest with yourself, most people who are in sales who are afraid of failing. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of being rejected. They're afraid of not succeeding, whatever that may be. And then you really need to explore, well, so what if you failed? This is a numbers game. You don't have to convince every single person you talk to buy the program. I would say for my speaking business, for example, I would say out of every 10 calls I get inquiring about my speaking services, maybe one or two of them will hire me. I focus on those one or two and give them the best bang-up job they've ever had. I don't worry about the eight that I missed. Okay.
Yep.
So people have this fear of failure, and they're worried about, you know, what if I don't get this person, or what if I don't do it well, and then they procrastinate and avoid what they should be doing because it's scary to them. So you have to get in touch with your fears first. And you don't have to be a born salesman. There is no such thing anyway as a born salesman or go to college and study sales. Anybody can sell anything if they believe in themselves.
Yeah, I like that. It keeps coming down. Write it down. Believe in yourself.
You
get rid of the internal critic.
You can sell anything if you believe in yourself and if you believe in the product you're selling. It's hard to sell something if you don't believe in the product, because then you're faking people.
Yep,
like a car salesman. I mean, I can't stand those people. They tell you all this baloney. They don't believe themselves. So anyway, if you believe in yourself, if you believe in your product, if you're putting something out there that's really going to affect the lives of your clients, then that is the best thing you can ever do for anybody. You should have no trouble promoting that to your people or to your potential clients. And, you know, do things like I did in the beginning. Go offer yourself to speak for the Chamber of Commerce or for the for Rotary or anything where they don't pay for that, but they're always looking for speakers, and promote your business and talk about what you can do to help people. Right now, this is a hot time because gyms and things like that have become very popular in the last few years. I know with the economy, though, people may not be going as much as they used to, but this whole health kick with exercise has become huge, and gyms, you know, tend to be sprouting up in different places where they weren't successful before. So I think you're really on the cutting edge of something with the kinds of work that your entrepreneurial audience has, but believe in it yourself.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if you can anticipate issues that people will have, bring it up, bring it right to the surface. Like, I know this may be a lot of money for you to budget monthly as an expendable money, but let's talk about the, and I know that that's probably something that you may be worried about. Let's talk about what you can't put a price tag on, which is your health and wellness.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So these are the kinds of things to talk. Anticipate the problems they'd be having and bring it right to the surface. That's the easiest thing, easiest way to convince someone that they can trust you is you know their problems and you're not trying to shove anything down their throat, but you're trying to show them how much it will help their life. And in fact, if someone is physically healthier, they'll be mentally healthier, which means they'll probably be more successful in their own job.
100%.
So what you're doing for them with this physical training that you're doing is you're putting them in a position where they may be able to be even better at their own job or get a better job or whatever. They're not going to burn out as quickly. Their stress level will be lower. Show them all of these benefits that people don't normally think about.
Man, we are hearing the best of Dr. Jack Singer right now. Jack, if we go to your website, drjacksinger.com, you obviously have mentioned several different products. The one that we were talking about that it sounds so compelling is the Instant Sports Success. Is that the one, if we had to choose one, is that the one or is it hard to say just one? How can we learn more about those products? Do you have a little review of each of those?
Okay, well, Instant Sports Success, if you click on that on the thing, that's an ebook series.
Yep.
And what it really is the written version of what I have on the CD series called Core Sports Performance.
Yep.
So instead, people wanted the ebooks because they don't want to spend the money for the core sports. It's $69 for the series on CDs, but it's a lot cheaper if they go and get an ebook. But then they have to just use my script and they record it for themselves in their own voice.
Yeah.
So that was really made for people who'd rather read something into a tape recorder, record it themselves, than buying my Core Sports Performance.
Great investment.
Yeah, the one that you and I were talking about that is the Loving the Inner You. I don't even see it on there. It's supposed to be in there, but I don't. Oh yeah, it's on the bottom.
We'll get Denise on that. We'll get.
Yeah, it is. It's Loving the Inner You is the last one on the list under store. And that is that's the hypnotic series that's really appropriate for anybody to get rid of that childhood garbage. And
love it. If our mastermind or our clients want to get more of you, Jack, best way to reach you, talk to you, how can they reach you?
Let me give you an 800 number, and I will actually give them a free 20-minute consultation on the phone so they can discuss their issues.
Okay.
And that's 800-497-9880.
800-497-9880.
Right. And I'll be happy to talk to them about any issues they have and tell them what I can do. And that's a way for them to get a feel for me with their personal agendas to see if they're comfortable with me. And it helps me decide if I'm comfortable with them because I don't take every client. I don't have enough time.
Yep.
I really take selective clients that I really sense that I can really help them overcome a major problem and that they're going to be motivated and things like that.
Wow. Powerful call. Dr. Jack, I want to thank you. We're going to take some questions, but before we do that, I just want to thank you for your time. Just a tremendous call, great information that each and every one of us can use for ourselves personally as well as for our clients. I mean, this is just phenomenal stuff. Guys, you have the opportunity, Dr. Jack extended, if you want to, for 20 minutes, certainly talk about any issues that you may want to focus on or challenges or obstacles you may want to overcome. Just a wealth of information, and they give you some pointers in that time. And maybe it's not yourself. Maybe it's your clients that are stuck, and you've been on them for a year or 2 years, and they just can't overcome that one barrier. Well, maybe you get him on your team, and now all of a sudden you have a sports psychologist that you work with, and he doesn't need to be in your facility. He's right there in Orange County, California, but he works over the phone, and he sends out tapes, and he has all his products, and just a highly respected man. You look at his background, and it's like, wow. I mean, you certainly have an unbelievable story, Dr. Jack, and I really want to thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, and, I went to school for all those years, and my dad, bless his heart, he really didn't know what he was doing. He was really screwing up my self-esteem because he kept saying, you're just a professional student. Are you ever going to get out of school? Do you ever want to do anything besides be in school? And I just had to let it go in one ear and out the other because I knew I was preparing myself to do what I was going to do the rest of my life. So after I finished my clinical psychology training, I then took a postdoctorate in sports psychology, and I just kept lining up thing after thing because I knew I was building blocks to my future. But I had to overcome my father's resistance, saying, you're just a professional student, you don't ever want to really go out there and work and that kind of thing. And that's an example of negativism. I loved my dad. I wasn't going to leave my dad, but I was going to ignore those negative messages.
Well, You walk your walk and talk your talk because you did two things that you talked about on this call. Number one, you got rid of your internal critic, and then two, you believed in yourself. So while everyone else around you, including your father, was
right.
doubting you, you knew what your path was going to be, and you may not have known exactly how it was going to turn out. You took action on that, and for that, we thank you as a mastermind group, because your value that you have shared with us today really is going to go way beyond this one-day call, and I thank you for your time so much.
Oh, Todd, it's my pleasure. Anytime.
Let's open up the call. If you have any questions, if you're on the webcast, you have any questions, we're just going to take 5 minutes of calls. If you have a webcast question, you can certainly ask that question now to Dr. Jack. If you're on the call, we're going to unmute you. And if you have the chance, we've covered a lot of information. I don't know if we'll have any questions because you guys are all so phenomenal. And Dr. Jack was killing it today. But let's see. You're on the line. You're unmuted. Anyone have any questions for Dr. Jack or myself? Or if you are on the webcast, feel free to chime in now because you have Dr. Jack Singer on the line.
Yeah, Dr. Jack, this is John DeMalley here. I got
Hi,
a question
Tom.
For you. How you doing?
Okay.
Thank you
Hi.
For all the useful information. It was awesome.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Takes me back to my class. Last semester I did a sports psychology class, and I loved it. So
All right.
Just got a couple of questions for you. What is, like, systematically, how should one go about using, like, imagery? You know, I know. Maybe for like a beginner to an expert, like how should you view yourself for optimum performance?
Excellent question, John. Imagery is a version of self-hypnosis. It's like a beginning step of self-hypnosis, and imagery can be anything from simply closing your eyes and visualizing what you want to happen, or imagery can be, say, for someone who has trouble sleeping. I tell them to close their eyes and just visualize themselves on the best vacation they ever took or the favorite place they went as a child that was completely relaxing and serene. Could be a beach scene, mountains, stream, whatever you want it to be. And just visualize it as if you're really there. Get in touch with all of your senses. Sense of sight, what are you seeing? Look at all the details. What are you smelling? What are you hearing? What are you feeling against your skin? Is there a breeze? And the more you can visualize that and get into that, the more relaxed you'll be. And if it's a vision that you want people to use to help them be successful, again, the more frequently they visualize it and the more in more detail they visualize it, your subconscious mind will begin to believe that that is supposed to happen. So with
Nice.
People who are trying to lose weight, I tell them to visualize themselves as they will feel when they look in the mirror seeing that new body. And just visualize what you're going to feel. What are the emotions you're going to have? And if you keep doing that, your subconscious mind wants to direct you to that goal.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. That's
sure.
awesome.
Another question, John? Are you good on that?
What do you say to yourself before you have a big speech or performance? What goes through your head? How do you psych
excellent,
yourself up?
Excellent, John. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Here's what I don't say to myself. Okay, I actually screwed up something. I took an audition with ABC in Miami many, many years ago before there was anybody known as Dr. Phil. I was going to be the original Dr. Phil. I had the idea, bring on a psychologist, have him interview people in the audience and all of that kind of thing, and I bring in guests and everything. No one ever did that before.
No.
And so I came up with the idea, and I went to an ABC affiliate. A producer wanted me, they were really interested in the idea, and they told me to bring one of my clients with me to just do as an audition. And I worried the whole way between my home in Fort Lauderdale and Miami. All I said to myself was, what if I don't know what to say? What if they're looking for something that I'm not doing? And I got myself so worked up negatively that by the time I got there, I could barely speak, and obviously I screwed up the audition. Okay? So that's the what you don't want to do. You don't want to ever say what if, or do anything like that. When I give a speech, what I say to myself are the following things. This is going to be another exciting moment in your life, Jack, because by the time you leave an hour from now, you will have moved at least one person in this audience to a place that person never would have gone to before, and they're going to love it, and it's going to make their life different, and that makes it all worthwhile. And if I do it for more than one person, that's even better. The next thing I say is, they don't know 1/20th of the information I'm going to give them. So I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to know everything. And I can forget some things, and it won't make any difference because I'm going to give them much more information than they ever hope to get, so it's okay. So I give myself permission not to have to have everything memorized. See what I'm saying?
Yep.
So those are the positive things I say to myself, and then I do a little visualization. I visualize how I'm going to feel when the speech is over, because I know how I feel all the time when the speech is over, and that's a combination of a big sense of relief because I've gone through this big emotional thing that I get energized myself and now I'm calming down, and also feeling good about myself on the plane trip home because I know I was successful in what I did. And I give myself a big pat on the back before I even do it.
Wow.
Nice. That's a great question, Jonathan. Great question. And you know what, Dr. Jack, you said there, I like it. I only have to reach one person. Because what that's doing is not psyching you out that you have to reach all, 300 people or 3,000 people.
I can't reach all 300. And I give feedback sheets to everybody. And on the feedback sheet, what did you like, what didn't you like, and all of that. And over the 20 years or 25 years I've been professionally speaking, it averages about 2% of the audience will write something like, this was a waste of my time. This guy didn't tell me anything I didn't know, I knew already. 2%. 98% says, this is the best thing I've ever been to. I can't wait to hear him again. So what am I going to focus on after that, the 2% or the 98%? I can't be perfect.
Exactly.
Okay. And my rationalization is for those 2% is they came in with an agenda. Nothing would have made them happy.
Amen.
That's awesome. Amen.
Wow, that was a great question and a great answer, Dr. Jack. JD, any other questions, Jonathan or Larry or anyone else who might be on the line? I know we've got people on the webcast.
Todd, I have a quick question. It's Larry again. Dr. Singer, very, very insightful and just outstanding information today. Enjoyed it immensely.
And I
want to ask a personal question, Dr. Jack, if I could. When your dash is all over, a lot of times we've been working with Todd on a lot of different programs. We talk about the dash, born 1955, deceased, whenever it's going to end. And what is that going to say for you when you're done with your journey? What is that going to say on your tombstone, not to get morbid here? What would you like it to say? I did this and...
I use the dash, the poem of the dash, frequently when I give my speeches.
Amen. Linda Ellis.
And unfortunately, I got in trouble with the author once because I never knew there was an author. Every place I found it, it said unknown. So I handed it out to a bunch of doctors, and it said unknown, and the word got back to the author, who really ripped me a new one, that she wanted me to pay for using her poem without permission. She was really an irate person, and I had to do some psychotherapy with her on the phone. Once I got her calmed down, and I said, look, this is a wonderful, inspirational poem you wrote. Don't tarnish it with this crap you're throwing at me here.
Exactly.
I was just trying to help some doctors feel good about themselves. I wasn't trying to steal your idea. Now I'll use your name from now on. So she was okay after that. But anyway, that's a fabulous question, Larry, and I don't think I've ever been asked that question. I ask it when I give the poem, what would you want to have written on your tombstone? What I would like people to say about me is that I cared. And I cared about the lives of other people, and that when I tried to help them, I really did genuinely care about them. It wasn't about making a living. It wasn't about charging money. It wasn't about any of that. It was that I really did care about them, and my passion was to help them to make a difference in their lives. Mm. And when I get that kind of feedback on my feedback sheet, it makes my year. People every so often will write, this was a perfect timing. I needed to hear you at this moment in my life. That's the best feedback I could ever get.
Mm. Powerful. That's substance right there. That is no superficial. That's substance.
So, Larry, if you and your colleagues know that you don't have to touch everybody, it would be nice, but that's impractical. If you touch one person a day, if you make a difference in the life of someone, if you have a mentally challenged person who you can build up physically fit, think about what you're doing for that person. I mean, you have no idea the ripple effects of what you're doing for your clients. You have to remember that when you resist selling your services. Think about, what can I be doing for someone that I'll never even know about that'll have ripple effects? If I help someone's self-esteem, how many ways will that help them in their lives that I haven't even thought about?
Yep.
These are the things that make you want to go in and provide your service.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for answering that question, Doctor. Just wonderful.
Any other questions on the webcast or on the phone, whether it be Larry, JD, or anyone else on that webcast, feel free. Really great substance that Dr. Jack is providing us all today, and really going the extra degree and then some. Although it is Saturday, Dr. Jack's got a full day as well. He's got some interviews he's got to do this afternoon, and he's spending his time with us. So,
Dr. Jack, one more question. This is JD.
Okay, JD.
What's your number one team building exercise that you like to do with large groups?
Oh, good. Because I have team building workshops. I actually go through things like that. It's usually I don't have a specific. I have like hundreds of exercises, but the specific things that I think are the most important are communication skills, building communication skills. And there's many exercises for that. You can get books of exercises. I'm standing in front of my library here, and here's a book, Team Fitness Meter, How-To Manual for Building a Winning Work Team by Meg Hartzler and Jane Henry. There's hundreds of these. You just have to find something you're really comfortable with. So I don't have a name of an exercise that I use all the time. I always accommodate my exercises to the group and the goals of the group. But communication skills are critical, because if you don't have communication skills, you won't get anywhere with anything else. So we have to break down the barriers that's keeping people from communicating with each other first. And it's the same thing that you would say in a relationship, isn't it? If someone comes in for marital or relationship counseling to me, if they can't communicate, we're not going to be able to do anything. So that has to be the first step.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you.
Dr. Jack, we're going to wrap this call because you got to go, I know, and our mastermind is just awesome. Guys, I want to thank
you. Pee is what I have to do.
There's the humor. There's the humor. Well said. Masterminders, great job. Thank you so much for listening. Whether you're listening live, whether you listen via the recording, you got drjacksinger.com. Contact him. Communicate with him. He's now someone that you can work with as a sports psychologist as well. Dr. Jack, I would love to have you again on one of our calls in the future, because you had such great information. I appreciate all the time you spent with us today.
Oh, anytime, and your people can formulate more questions as they think about it for the next time, and maybe you'll have more people join you, so there'll be new questions. And if anyone wants to call me, it's confidential. Just remember that. I'm a psychologist. I abide by the ethics of the American Psychological Association. Anything you talk to me about is only going to be between the two of us. If I'm not here when you call, please leave your name and number, and I promise I will get back with you as soon as I can. I don't use a secretary. It's all confidential. It's only me on the answer machine. I'm the only one who listens.
I love it. Remember, an optimist finds the good in every challenge. A pessimist finds the challenge in every good. Today, guys, let's go out. Let's be an optimist. Let's infiltrate the world with positive energy. Peace, love, God bless. Dr. Jack, thanks so much for a great call.
You got it. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you. Everybody.